welcome to the Apologetics Canada podcast. This is Steve Kim, your host, and I'm here with Andy Steiger and Chris Battle, as usual.
Greetings.
It's good to be here this morning.
Yeah, and we're somehow surviving this flu epidemic here.
Oh, it's killing my family.
So my whole family's down, too.
Yeah, the Steiger boys are out for the count.
It's funny. It's a lot of people around work, too, are...
About half the staff were gone.
Yeah. The other day, I remember I was sitting in the office, and all I could hear was sniffling, sneezing, nose blowing, and coughing. Yeah. It was just cacophonous around
And we should
me.
Probably say that by staff, we mean the Apologetics Canada. There's five of us, but we're a part of and work with the North U crew here at North U Community Church, of which, man, I hear that we have like 90 people on payroll.
Yeah, wow. In the office, I think it's upwards of 60-something people.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Which, if you've never seen our offices, by the way, they're pretty unique. We have an open office. It's pretty much just a giant library.
Yeah. Long tables, chairs, and everybody in their own place.
Yeah, everybody can see everybody else.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Steve watching his YouTube videos all day.
Yeah. Giggling away.
That's right.
I'm kidding. Steve's a workhorse.
It's actually kind of true because whenever I'm doing something where it doesn't require reading, I usually throw something on and I listen to it as I go.
He's like Data. He can just do multiple things at once.
We're all surviving it, and you can probably hear it in our voices. But I hope you guys are keeping healthy out there and make sure you wash your hands and all that other good stuff. Cough into your not armpits, your elbows.
That could be odd.
All bugs don't need, or bugs don't need drugs or something like that.
Yeah.
How does that thing, it's a commercial?
You know, I've never heard that before in my life. I'm starting to wonder if you perhaps just made that up.
It could have been in a dream. But I remember there was this doctor after watching cartoons, and it had some pithy way of, you know, all bugs don't need drugs or something like that. Wash your hands, right?
I'm trying to teach my kids right now. Wash your hands, cough into your armpit or arm.
Elbow.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Elbow. And then I'm trying to teach them as well to at least bathe once a week.
It's a good rule of thumb.
It is, but it's a fight at the Steiger house. My boys hate bathing.
I can identify with that. But it's funny, I remember doing Food Safe, and the answer to that almost invariably is just wash your hands. So you could not study at all, and just, it's like Sunday school, right? If you throw Jesus, 9 times out of 10 you're going to get the answer right. Wash your hands in Food Safe. There's like 50 questions and like 48 of them the answer is just wash your hands.
We hope you guys are keeping healthy out there. Don't be like us. Stay healthy. We'll move on quickly to some announcements here. Well, we actually really have one. And that's the Apologetics Canada Conference. You guys know it's coming up on March 4th and 5th. Our early bird ticketing ends at the end of this month. So we only have a few days before the price goes up again. So if you want to get the best bang for your buck, you want to get your tickets now and make sure you use the discount code THINKING16, and that'll give you extra 10% off.
Oh, the 16 stands for the year.
Yes. See what,
that's why we got
there.
You on the podcast, Chris.
Yeah.
So, we also wanted to mention or highlight a different speaker each week. Last week we highlighted J. Warner Wallace. This morning, today, I want to mention Natasha Crane. Mm. If you've not heard of her, she's newish on the scene. She's a fantastic thinker. Mm-hmm. She's a mom. She is a very popular blogger on parenting the life of your child's mind. And she writes a blog called ChristianMomThoughts.com. She's written, I think, a couple articles now that have gone viral. She's got a great following, great advice. My wife absolutely loves reading her blog. And then she has a book that's coming out called Keeping Your Children on God's Side.
Keeping Your Kids on God's Side, yeah.
What did I say?
Children.
Okay, children.
I did the same thing.
Did you? Yeah. So what, say it again. What is it?
Keeping Your Kids on God's Side.
Okay. Keeping Your Kids on God's Side. And then that is coming out, I mean, right in time for the conference. I think it comes out a week before the conference starts, but we're going to have her books there. So she's a great speaker. I mean, to us, this is probably one of the issues that I think is, for all of you listeners, particularly if you're parents, you need to hear what she's saying. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever I speak at a speaking engagement, almost every time I hear a parent tell me about how their kid has walked away from the faith.
Mm-hmm.
And they normally walk away from their faith in their college years, but as anyone will tell you, it doesn't start in their mm-hmm. college years. They start asking questions as children, and you need to be able to start thinking with them and developing a rapport as you're parenting the life of their mind as a child
mm-hmm.
with when they're a child. And so her advice and the stuff that she's going to be talking about is absolutely crucial if you're a parent. I mean, this issue is huge, and that's one of the reasons why we brought her in, and we'd love for you to mm-hmm. meet her and to learn from her. She'll be not only at the conference, but on the Thursday before the conference, on the 3rd, she'll actually be speaking, doing a free lecture. I think it's free.
Is it free? It is free and open to the public.
Open to the public at MEI School here in Abbotsford. Mm-hmm. And so, again, we wanted to just provide as many opportunities for you parents as possible
mm-hmm.
To learn from her and just to engage with her. I mean, here's a lady that's thought a lot about it, mm-hmm. done schooling in this, and is a parent. And mm-hmm. so she's in the midst of it.
Is it true that seating's limited for that? So they need to, if people want to register, they...
I believe there are about 300-350 seats available at MEI.
I think they're almost half, like... Not just almost half of it's already registered for.
Yeah.
So you really need to register.
It's going really quickly. So if you want to register for it, you can just go to our website, apologeticscanada.com, or rather you should go to apologeticscanadaconference.com and then select the Abbotsford location, and you will, as you scroll down, you'll see where to register.
Yeah.
So yeah, make sure you come on out, and you'll get some really awesome and practical tips from Natasha Crane.
Cool.
So moving on, Chris, you have a knack for
what's going on in the news?
You have a knack for finding some really interesting stuff.
It's true. He sniffs it out.
I try to keep my ear to the ground for interesting things.
This one definitely is high up on the weird to me.
This is bizarre. Well, because we often use the example of flat earthers as, you know, someone... You hear atheists almost comparing Christians to flat earthers, right? We're kind of stuck in the past and things have changed. But now there's an extremely popular rapper who is a flat earther.
He actually sounds serious. At first, I thought it was a joke.
See, I thought he had to be.
The jury's still out, man. It's weird.
It's really weird.
It's really bizarre.
But, he's going, if he's trolling, he's like the king of the trolls. If this is actually fake, he's doing something, he's going well beyond the Call of Duty, right? Like he's made it his mission to troll this one thing.
Well, so who's the rapper?
Is he goes by Bob. It's B-O-B, mm-hmm. like B.O.
And he has a new album, I think it's out, that started this whole thing.
Well, actually it's what started was a Twitter rant. A few nights ago, he went on Twitter in the evening and started putting up posts. And it started with
So I saw some of it. He's been tweeting, like, arguments for Flat Earth.
Exactly. He started off with one with a picture of himself, and in the background were two cities. And the caption says, "The cities in the background are approximately 16 miles apart. Where is the curve? Please explain this." And what he's saying is essentially the way the equation goes is that every 8 miles, there's a drop of, and I forget my math, but say a foot, right? Or something mm-hmm. like that with the way the curvature of the earth goes. Mm-hmm. So, because it's supposed to be 25,000 miles in circumference. So every 8 miles or so, there's supposed to be some. So he says in 16 miles, there should be a noticeable curve, but I don't know, understand how to the naked eye you would see a curvature of that proportion, right? Because the 16 miles in 25,000 isn't a lot. So at any rate, this was what started it. And then he did a series of tweets well into the morning arguing, quote unquote, mm-hmm. for a flat earth.
There's your problem right there. The dude's tweeting all night long.
Yeah.
All right. I mean... But that should set you up right there. That something ain't right here.
Well, and to top it off, he ends up making a song because Neil deGrasse Tyson responded to him, famous astrophysicist.
Of course he did, though. But I mean, this plays right into a lot of atheists, you know, dreams. Like, they love the flat Earth people because it just speaks to, you know, the knuckle draggers of our day that in their opinion are most likely religious and buy into these ridiculous ideas like the Earth is flat.
Which, is this rapper religious by any
way? Not that I can tell. I mean, I wouldn't,
I didn't see anything about that either. But
no, but I mean, who knows, right? It seems like most people will give it up to God, at least in paid lip service to him. But
right, but as a cultural myth, I think that they like this because then it's like it continues the myth.
Right.
But I mean, we've talked on this before, but you know, I can't help myself. We got to say it again. The idea that people in the past thought that the world was flat is a myth straight out of the 1800s.
Yeah.
Two dudes made it up. I always forget that William
Draper
and Andrew White Dickinson. Andrew Dickinson White. There we go.
Yeah, I don't bother with their middle names anymore. I don't know what it is about people from the 1800s. It's their first, middle, and last name.
They love the middle name.
John William Draper? I think that's his first name.
Yeah, so
name
it's John Draper and Andrew White.
Yeah.
They came up with this idea, straight up made it up, and again,
called the conflict thesis, by the way.
Yeah,
if you want to look it up.
It was wrapped into the conflict thesis. This was just one of the aspects of it, pretty much to dog Christians or anyone religious that they buy into these ridiculous ideas, which isn't true. Again, the Greeks calculated the circumference of the earth 500 years before Christ. Now, they didn't get it absolutely right, but they were close.
But they had the basic idea because they could understand that a ship going over the horizon slowly disappears. It doesn't fall off a cliff.
That's right. It was intuitive that the world must have been round. Again, even with Columbus, the controversy there wasn't that he was going to sail off the map. The controversy there was he thought the world was a lot smaller than it was, and he ended up being wrong. So this idea of a flat Earth, it's amazing to me how it continues to stick around. Even in academics, you'll hear these really well-educated men and women proclaiming that people in the past thought that the world was flat. And it has no purchase. I mean, this is the one that gets me, is you can see paintings from the 1500s, and these people are there's people in the paintings. This is the part that gets me. I think of Raphael's The School of Athens. He's painting people from antiquity, okay? And they're holding globes in their hands.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, again,
I think it's just a way of propagating a narrative that ancient people are stupid, right? It's what C.S. Lewis referred to as chronological snobbery.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who believe this.
Oh, yeah.
So think about it like this. If you were to go back in ancient Egypt in a time machine, you were to snag somebody, and then you were put them in your time machine and zoom them back to the 21st century, these people would be Neanderthals. You know, they would not be as intelligent as we are.
Yeah.
A lot of people believe this.
Yeah, and
the farther back you go, the dumber they are.
Yeah, which is bizarre when we think of, especially in disciplines like philosophy, who do we go back to all the time, right? The Greeks, like 2,500 years ago, we're still examining and building off what they thought. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
So anyway, Neil deGrasse, then he's just loving this, and he was tweeting back and forth.
Yeah, he's having a field day with it. I mean, he's being a good sport, right? Like he's playing with him, and he says, "Dude, you know, just because your reasoning is 500 years old, which do you know what I'm saying? But at any rate, but he says it doesn't change the fact that your music's good. But to me, I think that the biggest deal
your
with
reasoning
it,
never existed,
exactly,
so that we know of or recorded.
Yeah." It's
so that's the sort of thing that kind of convinces me that the perceived gap between you and some academic may not be as big as you might think, right? Because there's some university professors, they have their blind spots because they have their areas of specialization, and outside of that specialization, they tend to be pretty
ignorant.
Ignorant.
A quick Google search of this, by the way, if anybody's like, are you sure? Just a quick Google search and you'll see.
It's very easy to find out. And this actually speaks to what Steve was talking about last week about the gap, and that we're all capable of bridging that gap, at least to some degree, based on the amount of work and discipline that we're going to put in with our life of the mind. But the thing I find most disturbing about this is Bob has, and I hope I'm saying his name right, but
I have no idea. I just don't know
if it's B-O-B, but with the dots, but at any rate, him, he's got 2.29 million Twitter followers. And evidently, a lot of them are buying into this because we don't, in our society, like to think for ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. We want to just kind of go along with the narrative in a sense because thinking is hard work.
And I think there is some this sense of wanting to stand out. Mm-hmm. Like you want to show yourself to be. I find that a lot of my friends who are conspiracy theorists, they have this kind of mindset where, you know, everybody is just kind of blindly taking in the information that the world gives you, but I'm different. Right? I know what's really going on, right?
So he says that himself. He's like, I'm a free thinker. I'm not going to buy into this, you know, I'm not going to drink the Kool-Aid of this whole round earth thing that you guys are selling.
Even though we got pictures from space of this round rock called Earth.
Those are fake though. The moon landing, fake. It's all in his arguments.
Oh, that's right. I forgot there is that episode in X-Files, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we all know that X-Files is true. That's why they brought it back. By the way, it got mixed reviews when it just aired. For those of you who don't know, X-Files is back. Mixed reviews, woo-hoo. But I'm, you know, jury's out until I see it for myself.
I'm willing to check it out.
All right. So I guess we'll kind of wrap it up there for now.
Moral of the story?
The world's round.
The world's round, yeah.
Some profound stuff we think about at Apologetics Canada here. So we're moving into part three of...
How then shall we live?
How then shall we live? Thank you. So we're talking about discipleship today, and I think this is sort of right down Andy's alleyway.
Yeah, this was the subject that I was given to talk on, and I was pleased to do so because I find that this is an important question. So we were looking at a couple different ways of how do we live. Last week we looked at the life of the mind. Before that we looked at the life of...
spiritual disciplines.
Yeah, of the heart, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And now we're looking at the life of the hands, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, how do we actually live this out? And in Christianity, we would look at this as discipleship. The problem is, and I'm curious your guys' experience in this, but as I've been in ministry now for 15 years. I was thinking about that the other day. I'm like, are you sure, Andy? Is your math right? Like, dude, you're old, man. Anyway, so I've been doing this for 15 years, and one of the things that just continues to surprise me as I've worked in the church, and it's not just people in the church, but it's pastors leading it as well, is the number of them that cannot articulate. If you were to ask them, what is discipleship? First of all, could you define the term? And second of all, could you even explain the idea? Most of them are totally inept at being able to explain what discipleship is.
Yeah, that story that you told in your blog post from Monday really stuck out at me. You know, this senior pastor saying, we value discipleship, and the youth pastor saying, well, that's what we're trying to figure out first. What is discipleship?
Yeah. Well, yeah. To me, it just typified it. Like, I've seen that play out so many times. I'll never forget the conversation. Yeah, you're right. The senior pastor excitedly said, yeah, our church is all about discipleship. And then the youth pastor said, yeah, you know, and... said, but first we're trying to figure out what discipleship is. And then the lead pastor, he's like, you know, shaking his head like, yeah, you know, we're trying to figure it out. I'm like, you should probably know. But I mean, that's the irony, isn't it? I mean, this is the Great Commission. This is Matthew 28:19. This is what Jesus told us to go and do, to go and make disciples. You know, that is what your church should be doing. And a lot of churches, if you notice on their mission statement, that's a big part of it. You know, is to make disciples, because that's what you've been called to do, right? But they don't know what that means.
Yeah, I remember when I first came into the church 8 years ago, I was looking around and I was watching, you know, I was trying to be a student, just watch how people did things. And I'm reading my Bible and I kept, you know, the whole discipleship and Jesus' relationship with the disciples. I was looking at that and then I was looking at what I was seeing and I was thinking, there's a disconnect here. There's something missing. And that's what led me to eventually talk to you, Steiger, about discipling me, because I said, you know, because I had been striking out, talking to some guys, saying, hey, would you do that? And they'd be like, yeah, you know, I'll meet with you for coffee once in a while. And there's no real intentionality, right?
Yeah. And so what exactly, so this is where I think this is an important topic for us to talk about, to explain, you know, what is it? And so to begin with, you got to define your terms. Like, what do we mean by disciple? Because I find a lot of people just don't even know what that word means.
Good philosophical starting point.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Define your terms. Well, you I mean, this is an easy one to define. I mean, you just have to remember what Jesus, the how those people who followed Jesus, what, how did they view him? You know, they viewed Jesus as a rabbi, and that's a word for teacher. And that's how they understood him. He was a teacher. And so if these people then are following a teacher, you know, what does that make them? Well, it makes them students. And that's exactly a first century understanding of a disciple. Mm-hmm. They were a student, but more than just a student. See, because we have different understandings of student. You know, we have the idea of a student where you go and you just listen to a prof lecture. That's one kind of student. And we get that. But then we understand that there's another type of student. There's the apprentice, right? I mean, so I have a friend who's in the medical field, right? So he was a student where he went and he heard lots of lectures. And then so there was a lot of facts that were given to him. By the way, this is one of the ways that we know things, through the facts. But then as he continued on in the medical field, then they started experiment, like he had to actually do things, right? So I had to learn how to cut people open, and then he started cutting people open. I remember he told me about, you know, the cadavers that they would, you know, practice on. You know, so there's facts and there's experience, but then there's this third form of knowledge, and that's what I want to get at today. It's a tacit form of knowledge. This is a form of knowledge that we don't talk about very much, and I think it's one of the reasons why discipleship is so misunderstood in the church. Now, I want to quote Dallas Willard, who I think is, you know, before he died, you mm-hmm. know. He was one of the greatest examples of discipleship, living examples of discipleship. He died in 2013, but an incredible man. He was actually one of the first people I met when I went to Talbot. Mm-hmm. He was guest lecturing on discipleship that day. Wow. And blew my mind. At first, I was upset that there was this old dude speaking until he started speaking. And I was just like, you know, I have so much to learn from this man. But this is how he defined disciple. He said, a disciple is a learner, a student, an apprentice, a practitioner, even if only a beginner. And I think that's a great definition of discipleship, because there's so much like intertwined in what it means to be a disciple, particularly as we want to talk on this idea of tacit knowledge.
Hmm.
So let me tease that out then, this idea of tacit knowledge. First, you got the facts, then you have the experience, but then there's this third form of knowledge. Now think about a doctor. A doctor, before they will certify you, a doctor has to apprentice under another doctor, and they need to follow them and learn from them. And the reason for this is because tacit knowledge is a type of knowledge that you can't learn in a textbook. You can't articulate tacit knowledge. Tacit knowledge can only be learned from doing.
So then how is that different from knowledge from experience?
That's a great question, because I think a lot of people will get this confused. So let me kind of give you a couple of examples. So one is I can experience in that I can watch and observe a surgeon, you know, doing open heart surgery. So I can experience open heart surgery. Now think about it. I can study it from a textbook, and I can learn the facts about doing open heart surgery. I can watch or experience it being done, but then I can actually do it myself. Mm. Now, for a long time, I thought, aren't we just talking? I remember talking to Dr. William Lane Craig about this. Aren't we talking about the same thing? Isn't this experience here?
Yeah, just different variations of it.
Yeah, different variations. It took a little while to convince me that these are distinct. And I think this is why riding a bike is one of the prime examples it's given of tacit knowledge, and I think it explains it well. Consider And this is where Michael Polanyi, by the way, who I have to give credit to, who has helped me in my understanding of this a lot. Think about it in regards to bicycle riding. When you ride a bike, you can know the facts about a bicycle, but you can also experience a bicycle. So I can be around a bicycle. I can watch somebody ride a bicycle.
Touch it.
I can touch it. I can even have my parent put me on their lap and ride me around the cul-de-sac. I can experience what it's like to ride a bicycle. But that is a different type of knowledge than actually being able to ride a bike. So notice that even after doing all those forms of knowledge, you would not say that I know how to ride a bike or that I have the knowledge of what it is to ride a bike. That this would be, and this is when we're getting into tacit knowledge. Tacit knowledge, as Polanyi would say, requires indwelling. It require, by that I mean, it requires that the object becomes a part of yourself, that you indwell it. Now, let me change analogies for a moment. Think about when you use a hammer, for example. When you use a hammer or a tool, that tool becomes an extension of yourself. And if I'm going to hit a nail properly and accurately, I have to indwell that hammer as it's an extension of myself. And in doing, the more practice I have and the better I become at indwelling that object and me having it become an extension of myself, the more accurate I am with hitting that nail on the head. Mm-hmm. And so this is where tacit knowledge is, this idea of indwelling something, whether it be a bicycle or a tool. I mean, think about how a surgeon, the different devices a surgeon needs to actually have tacit knowledge of. They need to indwell and make an extension of themselves, and through practice, they can master it. This is tacit knowledge.
I find the word indwelling, it's an obstacle to me when I think about this, because I totally follow what you're saying. But I'm so used to being a Christian thinking of indwelling, like the Holy Spirit indwells me and empowers me and all that stuff. And then I think of me indwelling a hammer and I go, I don't indwell the hammer. I don't go in it. But my energy extends to it. I think of almost like a force field or something like that going over it. And then I appropriate it to my will. But I don't think of that as the word indwelling, right?
So yeah, it kind of throws some people because they're like, you know, is this new agey? No, this isn't new agey. This is a way for us to talk about what it is to be a person. I mean, this is one of the interesting things that we do. We indwell our bodies, right? I mean, my arms are an extension of myself. I can use them to do things, right? My legs, the same thing. Now, I can lose an arm, but we wouldn't say that I've lost, you know,
a part of you. You're lesser of a person.
Yeah, we wouldn't say that I'm less of a person if I lose my arm, right? But yet you can then take, so if I lose an arm, you can put on a prosthetic arm, and I can, to a lesser degree, I can indwell that in the sense that I incorporate it into an extension of myself.
See, that's the helpful illustration, I think, is using the mind-body illustration. And then, and I like how you said that it's to a lesser degree the prosthesis, because we don't want to be Gnostic and say that our bodies are negative somehow, right? Our flesh is bad, our bodies are awesome. But a prosthesis would be a little bit of a lesser. I don't want to disparage that. Do you know what I'm saying? But
right, because we think the body is good and this is the way that God made us to be.
Exactly.
But then God has also made us in such a way that we can use tools, and that's a unique function of people. Now, some people might say that chimpanzees can use tools. I would argue that they're not using a tool in the same way that we are. That could be a topic. If somebody really wants me to get into that, we could go into that. That's a topic of a not like when
you
when
can
a,
email that question in,
right? Like when a chimp takes a stick and puts it into an ant hole and gets a bunch of ants on the stick and then licks them off. I mean, is that a tool? You know, of the chimpanzee, that's debatable. But when we're talking about with a person, this idea of tacit knowledge, that my main point is this is a type of knowledge that can only be learned by doing. Now, this throws a lot of Christians off, though, when they'll hear James talk about faith without works is dead. Or they'll hear other, John making similar statements like, this is what's unique about discipleship, I mean, or tacit knowledge. I mean, when you see the facts, when you experience something, when you see, though, a person that tacitly has knowledge of, say, riding a bike and can ride a bike well, it actually inspires you to want to ride a bike in a similar way that you've seen it done.
Mm-hmm.
But the only way for you to learn to ride a bike is if somebody comes alongside you, like your mom or your dad, and they put you on a bike and they mm-hmm. push it mm-hmm. and they coach you as you learn to do this. This is what's interesting in Christianity, is because Jesus said, listen to his disciples, I've got to go, to his students. He said, I got to go, but I'm going to send the Holy Spirit and he's going to indwell you. Mm. And you are going to become an extension of God's loving hands.
See the body of Christ, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so you have Jesus showing this is how it's done, and this is how it's done well, right? And this is going to inspire you to do it, but now you are going to inspire other people to do it well. And God's going to use you. And as I mentioned in the blog in 1 John chapter 4, John says, listen, nobody's ever seen God before. But when God lives in you and works through you tacitly, right, mm-hmm. they're going to experience God through you. You are going to become an extension of, again, of God's loving hands, of God at work in the world. And so discipleship then incorporates all three of these. It's about learning the facts of Christianity. It's about experiencing the love of God, but it's about doing as well. It's about, because that it's not because you need to do to be saved. It's that's what you do when you are saved. That when you've experienced, this is what John says, once you've experienced God's love, you want to be that love to other people.
Mm-hmm.
But the only way to do that is if somebody comes alongside of you and coaches you into that knowledge. Mm-hmm. And as you as God becomes an extension of you working in this world, it's something that we learn through practice. I think that gets into that idea of sanctification. Sanctification is mm-hmm. something that happens, you know, when you put your faith, your trust in Jesus Christ. But it works itself out in this life as you begin to learn how to love people. And this is the idea then, is that we're practitioners of God's love, which plays into that. By the way, if you're wondering, well, if I'm a student of Jesus, what is it that I'm learning? Well, you're learning to love people.
Mm-hmm.
And as Jesus said, this is the point of all of this. This is the greatest commandment. Love God and love people. So as a disciple, you're going to learn how to love through God. Mm-hmm. And you're going to practice that with one another, but you're going to help each other to do this. I mean, ultimately then, this becomes what church is.
Hmm.
I mean, that's why discipleship and church are intertwined. I mean, because that's what church is. It is discipleship. This is us living this out.
And as you are being discipled too, I think there's this sense where in which you become more like Christ, right? I remember Mary Poplin saying, because she apparently had a chance to see Dallas Willard doing this Q&A, give this talk. And she said, I remember seeing that man and thinking to myself that if Jesus were a professor, he would look like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's high praise.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is too presumptuous of me, but that's kind of what I want to hear. That's sort of the goal of my Christian life, is I want to get to that point where somebody looks at me and says, if Jesus were such and such, he would kind of look like that. Although I probably want to hear more like, you kind of look like Jesus.
Well, yeah. And notice with Mary, that's what inspired her. She wanted to learn how to love like Dallas knew how to love.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you're going to learn that through is Jesus Christ and through one another, as we coach and mentor and spur one another on. So Chris and I, I had an opportunity to pour into Chris's life, and Chris has had the opportunity to pour into others. It's kind of like putting people on the bike and giving it a push and coaching them as they learn to love people the way God loves them.
Amen.
All right, that's a good place to wrap up. Thanks for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been the Ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more.